The Hale Varsity Radio Saturday Morning Show. Strap yourselves in. Here are your hosts, Chris Schmidt.
Y'all don't even know he was a virgin until he's 28, and now, roll tide.
And Mark Kranak.
Time has come for someone to put his foot down. And that foot is me.
Welcome to it. Weekend editions here. It's Hale Varsity Radio. We're presented by Currency, Chris Schmidt, Elijah Herbel, and Mark Kranak very shortly. Hope you're all doing well. What a kickoff to the weekend. What a seat at Haymarket Park. Nebraska baseball doing their job with an 8-4 win over the Illini. And, of course, it was the turnout, the show out for the recruiting weekend that is Nebraska football. We'll spend some time on it. We'll talk about this first week of spring ball for the Big Red. Interesting takes and comments from the coordinators. And there was even an open session of practice. You had pro day. So a ton of things going on. You're welcome to get involved with us if you're watching the weekend edition stream show. That sounds awfully basic to title something, but that's where we're at. The Hale Varsity YouTube channel is where you can watch us, can check us out with the Hale Varsity Radio Twitter feed at HVarsity Radio. And then on KFOR, Facebook and Twitter, the Labradoodle has emerged from her den, which is quite interesting. She's staring at her sister, the German Shepherd, outside, no doubt continuing to make me the most hated man Saturday mornings in the neighborhood. So it's been a really cool build for this weekend for Nebraska football and their recruiting. People far and wide have this thing circled. The 24th and 25th weekend, we're following it as well. And, you know, Elijah, if you ever collected baseball cards, there were two sorts of really cool specialty cards. And Donruss had the Diamond Kings, and the Diamond Kings were almost like oil painting cards. And I don't think they didn't end up being worth a lot, except for the Frank Thomas one, or there may have been a Don Mattingly one at one point back in my era, but the Diamond Kings, and you saw that last night, Darren Erstad, Shane Comine, Alex Gordon, as Nebraska was paying tribute, retiring the jersey at Haymarket Park to three of the best ever at Nebraska. And then you always had those rookies that were deemed future stars. And, well, you had a boatload of future stars on hand with Dylan Raiola. Have you ever seen anything like it? What's your take on the fawning that's going on? I mean, you need to show kids how much you're interested in if they attend or not, if you're a fan base. But Nebraska fans, bless your heart, take this thing to an unbeatable level. And now you're working on you've been to the baseball game, you've been to basketball, and then spring football awaits. The spring game awaits here in about a month.
Well, it's incredible whenever you see Dylan Raiola around. I feel like he's more popular as a recruit than he would be as a potential Husker football player. Like, if Dylan Raiola were to come to Nebraska, I don't think there'd just be random people asking him for pictures at Laszlo's and God bless you, Husker fans, going up and asking for a picture. Like, not many of the fan bases in the country are going to be going and taking pictures with recruits at a baseball game. That's part of that Nebraska factor that Dylan needs to consider. But, like, it's crazy to see a 17-year-old kid just being the most popular guy at a baseball stadium. And, like, people are focusing on where's Dylan Raiola instead of the baseball game. Like, that's just so crazy to me that it's a 17-year-old kid that hasn't stepped foot on campus. You don't know how good of a college quarterback he's going to be. It's just, recruiting services ranked him as the number one player in the country. And you know what? By all accounts, I think he deserves that. But it's just still so out there for me for a recruit to be the most popular person on campus, a 17-year-old kid. Everyone knows right now that follows the Husker football team, knows like the whereabouts of Dylan Raiola. It's incredible.
No, Andy nailed it. And Dylan's, this isn't Dylan's, I want to say, fault. I'm not calling it a fault, but he's just, he's getting introduced, man. Welcome to Nebraska. Mm-hmm. It's one thing to come here with your dad as a kid that's grade school age or even in junior high. It's another thing to come here as a sophomore in high school. But as you near decision time, this is all part of it. And how do you handle that spotlight? And I think the kid's great, and I think his family's great. So you hope it's okay. It's one thing to say, dude, there isn't anything else like it. There's no place like Nebraska. I can envision Dad saying that because he's heard the 80,000 cheers after a touchdown and a game-winning drive with Raiola and Hochstein and Fanoni and Crouch and Diedrich. And, I mean, go through that late 99 team. Putting someone away, putting a drive together, you can hear the roar, right? Think of Gladiator. I mean, that's what it sounds like. The cheers, the adulation of the crowd. Well, you're getting that now as a recruit, and Raiola was pretty low key from reports last night, but you had the attention given. They'll get a chance to see today, this morning, what practice is like. I assume there's a practice. I know they go every other day. Mm-hmm. To see what the work is going to be required to participate at a high level here. Because that's the other thing. I mean, it's one thing to showcase the love and the hope and the, man, we need you to play ball here, help flip this program. There's that mindset out there for a lot of Nebraska fans. It's also it'd be a pretty stunning accomplishment for Coach Rhule in short order without having really anything to show on the field at Nebraska. You got plenty to show on the field with your previous stops. But man, it's impressive to see the fan base come out and do their thing. Do we have a number from yesterday? Was there a sellout, Elijah?
I haven't seen officially if there was a seller or not, but did you see the video of Dylan Ryle up on the concourse leading the Go Big Red?
Oh, my God.
I knew Mark would love that.
Oh, my God. Dylan Raiola was chanting Go Big Red from the concourse. He's coming. He's coming. Natty. Natty, okay. 2026. Natty 2026. I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion.
That's pretty good. I like it. Mark. Were you waving the flag behind him, but it's all good. Did you get to the baseball game last night?
I could not go last night. I was being a J-sker. Is that okay? Are you allowed to do that?
That's fine, dude. Do your thing.
I mean, I'm not. I wasn't really being a J-sker, but I was watching that basketball game. Were either of you watching the basketball game?
Junior played ball at Papio South last night.
Oh,
and,
okay.
They won and did well.
Did he F around and get a triple double by chance?
No,
he did not.
Hung around, but I watched it on my phone. I watched the first half, and then we tuned it in on the way home.
Yeah. They're going to be insufferable, Creighton fans. If they make the Final Four. Yeah.
I'm happy for them. I'm happy for them because they've.
Me too.
They're a good squad to watch. To be honest.
Yeah.
No, and I'm like, I'm right between you two where it's like, yeah, I'm happy for them. Like last night as I was watching, again, it's that feeling of like, I can't root for Creighton, but I'm definitely not going to root against them. Like I'll be happy for the Creighton fans in my life that I know should Creighton win this game. That's how I was feeling last night. But I'm, again, also with Kranach where I'm like, man, if they're in the Final Four, oh man, it's going to be a long week leading up to that game. And then it's going to be a long off season.
Yeah, I know. Well, and at least with the Elite Eight, it's like the shortest lived badge of honor that there is, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like more people talk about, I remember actually when I first heard Elite Eight, I was like, wait, did somebody just make that up? I've never even heard of it because you're only in the Elite Eight for like 30 hours,
mm-hmm.
like 36 hours. It's so
That's why it's elite. It's just almost a 1 day plus thing.
Yeah. You're just more, it's more. like you hear much more about Sweet 16 or Final Four. Like if you make one of those two, awesome. Elite Eight, people are like, eh. Yeah, if you had a cup of coffee with that, I guess that was okay. I don't know. I'm surprised. Now, you know what freaks me out about the stuff too is just like the Ken Palm stuff or whatever. Those ranking systems loved them some Creighton all year. Even when they were like, they had that streak where they went 0-6 or something, lost like six in a row. Mm-hmm. And they still, all those rating systems just absolutely loved them and had them pegged. And remember, they were pegged earlier in the year as being like this caliber
top 15,
of team.
Yes.
Yeah, this caliber of team that the ranking systems love that are, you know, good chance to make like a Final Four type run. And damn, they're just a win away from doing that. Against a pretty athletic San Diego State team. I mean, I
know.
Let's not act like we're college basketball experts that watch San Diego State all year or anything. Like, I don't know about y'all, but that ain't me. I haven't. If I had, like, what am I doing in life?
Well, like, what I've seen from San Diego State is just what I've seen from them in the tournament. And from what I've seen in the tournament, like, among the teams remaining, it feels like the two best teams left are San Diego State and Gonzaga, followed by Creighton. I think that's probably what I'm looking at, just in terms of the quality of performances, who they've beaten. I look at San Diego State as being like up there 1A, Gonzaga 1B, and then Creighton right below them in terms of the performances we've seen. Like that San Diego State team has looked dangerous all tournament long.
Well, you've got a rope there. We've all covered a rope.
Mm-hmm.
So
from Omaha South, I believe.
The human being, thank you. When you said that, in my head, I was picturing a braided, thing that people use to tie.
Metro Star.
Okay. You literally said a rope, and I'm like, I have not covered a rope.
A rope. Like, my fault.
Just imagining like a rope slithering its way down the court playing hoops. Okay. The actual human, not the thing that people tie things to. Okay, good. Good. That's good.
So, Kranak, let's get your take here before we hear from Vogues. But pretty interesting feedback with Satterfield on a positionless offense where
– that was weird to hear, right?
You guys like, shut up, dude. Yeah. You can use interchangeable people to get your matchups set.
Yeah.
The want for 2-3 tight ends – which I love.
If you can, 13 personnel.
Yeah, if you can do it.
Hello.
And then just being able to ram the football and then hammer you off play action. Nebraska, and I listened to Charlie talk about this from time to time over the years. It's like, yeah, we would be probably last in the Big 8 or Big 12 in passing. It's just what we were. But we were first – in efficiency, or we were first in yards per completion.
Yeah.
And every good Husker fan knows about the old option pass where the tight end's lost and wide open. So no matter how average your quarterback is at throwing the ball to somebody, they can sure
get
throw
it. In
it. They can throw it far, or they can throw it to the wide open guy.
Get it in the vicinity. Yeah. That's really all you had to do. Yeah. And there are a lot of those times, too. Yeah, the tight end sort of waiting for it almost looks like a relay. Right. He's waiting for the baton.
Or it's a punt. Like, it's a punt. Punt formation.
Come on, ball. Come on, ball. And as soon as he caught it, sprints into the end zone.
Well, so from my watching back of like the old Husker games, it almost feels like what you see now whenever it's like the running back takes the toss outside and, oh, he's pulling up to throw it. There's a receiver wide open who then has to wait for it, and it would be a touchdown if he didn't get tackled right upon contact because it was underthrown by 15 yards. And I don't want to talk trash, but like that's what I see whenever I look back at the Husker passing game of old. Was like, oh yeah, this thing was 10 yards underthrown, but there's nobody around, and could have been a touchdown, but he got tackled after 20. I guess we'll take the first down.
And the receiver got absolutely destroyed coming back to the ball.
Yeah.
But he made it. Made the catch.
Yeah.
That's one of four completions on the day. And they ran for 400 yards and it didn't matter because they won 73-10.
Look, this all tells you how quickly it can change too, because none of the tight ends that he's talking about played last year.
No.
Like at all. Like, and now he's like, yeah, we're probably going to play three at a time. Like, whoa, bro. None of them have even taken a snap yet. But, you know, you kind of can't blame. I mean, as long as Fedoni's good, as long as Gilbert is good. Have you noticed coaches' reactions to Gilbert when people ask questions about Gilbert?
They pause, and then there's a tone to their voice.
Kind of like a...
yeah, there's a tone to their voice. Yeah, he's fast. Okay, like, is he really 280?
It's almost like they want to do this probably with their hands. Like, yeah, that's what Gilbert, and they're sitting there at the press conference. Ooh.
They're like, he's basically created a tight end in Madden, and he's real. that's how they act. That's how they act. But they kind of can't help themselves. Rule's done it. Satterfield's done it. You saw it. Both of them, like, literally, like, it makes them smile immediately. People are like, okay, so 6'4", 280, and fast? They're like, yeah. Yeah, he is. Like, okay.
Well, you remember after his freshman year at LSU, there was like people mocking him in the first round three years down the process. They're like, yeah, in 3 years, this guy's a top 10 pick. He just has to develop correctly. And so far that hasn't been done, but the measurables are there. And that's what we've talked about on this show is like, in terms of an athlete, what you see from Eric Gilbert on film and what you see from him whenever you just like see him around is like, this is a guy that should be a first round pick. And in terms of athleticism, might be the most unique freak guy we've seen around here at Nebraska since Randy Gregory. It's a question of can the coaching staff put it all together, but in terms of who he is as an athlete and what he brings to a football team, I think I literally have to go back to Randy Gregory in terms of what type of a freak this guy is, size, speed, athleticism all combined.
Yeah. And
he's super impressive, you know.
And Fedoni, similar.
Mm.
Right? Like, not... you know, not the same size, but also a freak. and so I found that really interesting where it's like, yeah, we're going to play three tight ends. And like none of Nebraska's tight ends are coming back. None of them. Like, okay. Okay. You have that many. Like that's the riches that we're talking about here. Interesting. And then the quarterbacks, you know, I would say just on the little bit of video that we've been able to watch and the, I think the whole team looks trimmer. Anybody notice? Do you guys think that?
Very fair.
Generally trimmer and quicker, more Brandon Vogel like. Did you guys notice that?
Quicker.
Brandon
and trimmer.
Joins us now. You joined right in time. We were just describing the perfect chiseled body type, and then you disappear. And I don't think it's coincidence, man. What you been?
I think it is a coincidence. I can't say I have noticed the trimness yet, but what I have noticed, and I guess at my age, the thing I'm most envious of is the flexibility. Because some of the stuff they're doing, I haven't seen a whole lot in you know, a decade plus of kind of watching football practice clips. So we'll see if that translates in any such way.
The yoga stuff, the reach thing. What is that called? That's like that's an
stretching?
Actual yoga move. No, it's a yoga move. It's like the
downward dog.
No, although maybe they have done that. I don't know. No, but they're incorporating yoga, like while they're in pads, as part of, you know, like the pregame stretch that everybody used to do, where it's
where
like
you go where you're touching your toe. Three.
Well, yeah.
And you're right. you're on your legs, you're on one leg, the other leg's up in the air.
Yeah, stuff like that. Chris froze in such an epic way right now on the YouTube stream that is just amazing.
Mark, to your point, I'm not sure that the team, from what I've seen, I mean, I'm not down there at practice every single day, but from what I've seen on social media, like, I don't think they look more physically impressive. Like, think about what Garrett Nelson looks like and what he looked like at Pro Day. He looks like Thor. Like that's how the Husker football team was built before. They just look, in my eyes, more like what the rest of the Big Ten looks like in terms of what their football players look like. It feels like they're more in line with what the rest of the Big Ten is doing. It's not a more trim. They're not more cut up. They just look more like what I expect a modern college football player to look like, if that makes sense.
I saw less fat dudes, is what I'm saying. I just did. Just saw less fat dudes. Like, you saw some fat dudes mm-hmm. last year. There's just not as many of those.
No, you know, they're leaned
down. By the way, that's a relative term. It's a relative sure. term.
It, listen, you and I, most of us, except for Elijah, we're all at a certain point in our 40s. And given the weekend, we can all fall into the fat dudes category. So we're talking about our own once in a while.
I'm getting after it tomorrow.
Oh, tomorrow's your day.
You watch.
Vogues, I want to get your thoughts here on, and Elijah and I started chatting about this. You were a big baseball card guy, right? Growing up.
I wasn't the hugest, but I did definitely. I mean, it was what you did. There was like one card shop in Alliance, Nebraska, in our county, and you'd go there and definitely, you know, subscribe to Beckett at some point in my life.
Yeah.
So I was that big, I guess, of a card person. I kind of haven't really revisited it since then. Like, I've got all those cards are back in my parents' house somewhere. I'm not quite sure where.
Well, I bring it up. You remember the Donruss Diamond Kings, right?
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And I was in search of the Frank Thomas Diamond King. It was really awesome. It was like some oil painting on a card. And at one point it was worth $25 and I felt great about myself. And then it's now $2. And then you had the Future Stars for Topps. I remember my Bo Jackson rookie. And that's what we kind of saw last night at Haymarket. We saw the Diamond Kings with Erstad and Comedé. In Gordon, and then you had the Future Stars, if they so choose, to be a part of Nebraska in the hot dog line, being mobbed, and it's just interesting. And Nebraska has done the fan base has done such a great job of showing up and showing out to voice their support for the baseball team over the years, but it almost felt like baseball. Oh yeah, you're opening the Big Ten last night, but. Everyone's here to see the recruits.
it was an interesting night. And, you know, I heard a little bit of the opening segment. You guys kind of talking about that. And that's one that does feel like a little bit unique to Nebraska. Like, you take those guys to a baseball game, I'll just select a school randomly, USC. What happens there? What's the reception like? And I'm not saying it's better, it's worse. But, you know, obviously talking about somebody like Dylan Raiola, and, you know, if you want that, if you want kind of to be the guy that everyone in the baseball stadium knows that you're there before you're even a Husker, it's going to be tough to replace that. That said, you could also look at it the other way. Be like, I just want to go do my thing. I don't need, I'm not going to be the toast of LA. There's some other famous people in LA, I've heard. So, you know, you can see the upside to both ways, but this is what Nebraska can offer. And strangely enough, like I said, I don't think this happens a lot of other places, a baseball game. I mean, in the SEC, you'd get it a little bit, but a baseball game is an interesting way that it can be a showcase for Nebraska football recruiting because of Husker fans.
There's a fine line between showing affection and then being like the clingy stalker girlfriend. You know, that you don't want to cross that threshold. You know,
no, you don't. You don't want to wear. You don't want to get too much of a preview of like, oh, this. Would this be what it was like if I came here? Could I never go anywhere? So
you guys are both worried about the restraining order, aren't you?
I know, right? But there's something slightly intoxicating about the stalker ex-girlfriend, right? Just a little bit?
Yeah. She's got wonderful eyes.
Yeah. If you're codependent, it's great. You know? You got to dive into the psychology of these kids. Think about it. Yeah, that's I put it this way. I would be shocked at this point, right? Not trying to prognosticate. If, like, would Raiola really be doing all this and then just not go to Nebraska? I'm just almost, that would almost be like trolling Nebraska in some way.
Well,
right?
I brought this up on the show this week.
Throwing the bones. Like, he's on a Georgia podcast talking about what's next. Did y'all see that?
I didn't see that.
I missed that. Tell me more about the Georgia podcast.
Like a Georgia fans podcast, and they're talking to him, and he drops, not so subtly, I mean, it's kind of subtle. But they're asking, like, hey, well, when are you thinking about coming back to Georgia? I know we're going to Nebraska this weekend. When are you coming back to Georgia? And he's like, yeah, well, you know, a little more, we'll see. You know, I'm going to go to Nebraska, have fun. And right now, really worried about what's next or something like that. Like, dropping these little...
How mobbed am I going to be at Haymarket?
I'm like, if he's 24 hours, I'm it's over. So I don't know. It just, like, he's not going to USC and doing things like that. He's not going to Georgia and, like, running with the Bulldog or anything. I just, right?
Well, think of the I mean, Georgia and USC are blue bloods of football. They have really great coverage. But to Vogel's point, I mean, there's a lot to do in L.A. The star power in L.A. is very real. And football, even when they're winning, isn't always on the radar. Georgia, you've just cranked out two national championships. Dylan's not the first five-star you've had there this week. They've got 75 of them on the roster. That's the reality and difference right now. Is Nebraska's a program that doesn't need to take a backseat to anybody. But when it comes to high-profile recruits, you don't often get them. I mean, think of the turnout for Micah Parsons. And that was a Friday Night Light deal. So it's a context thing because of the high profile and how often it does or doesn't happen here. And that, to me, is it with why the reaction's been. You know, if Matt Rhule keeps doing this, all right, say they land, let's be conservative and say they get 7 out of the, what's the number, 30 kids that are here this weekend. That'd be awesome. And you can mix and match 3 to 5 stars. But say you have a decent haul, and I would say that number is a pretty good haul. The next time around, if Rhule keeps doing his thing and they win and they've got a plan and it works and there's development, you might just start reeling in 4 and 5 stars at the rate Georgia and, dare I say, USC have been doing for years. I mean, there's that opportunity with this, but this is like the first test case of not a 5-star coming to Lincoln, but this many 5 and 4 stars with the new coaching staff. It's kind of a perfect timing moment for Nebraska.
I think it is, you know, and I think you kind of hit on what I view as maybe the central dichotomy here in this Raiola recruitment. If we've got a serious three of Georgia, USC, Nebraska, like, they're all brand names. They're all, you know, powerful traditional football programs. But beyond that, I think there's a pretty big difference here. It's almost like when you look at the talent that's already on hand at USC and certainly at Georgia compared to Nebraska, where you look at where they've been, you know, just recently the past 5-6 years. And I know USC prior to last year kind of wasn't hitting on all cylinders, but it just, like, for me, the central issue or kind of central question comes down to, like, what do you want? And we can think about this in LA terms and, like, movie terms. Do you want to be in the next Marvel movie? Because some people really do, and it's great. It's kind of like plug and play. You're one of many. That's Georgia, USC. Or do you want to be in kind of the quirky, you know, sort of original idea type of movie? Do you want to be in Everything Everywhere All at Once? Just won the Oscar kind of out of nowhere. But that's not, you know, the next Avengers movie. It's just, and you can get the appeal of both of them. It's just that we don't know which way he might go at this point.
Well, and Brandon, I don't know how to compare this to movies, but a point I brought up earlier this week, which I'm still going to stay with, is, like, if Dylan were to go off to USC after this recruitment, once you come to Lincoln and play a football game, you are public enemy number one. Like, if you are going to a different future Big Ten school, there is going to be some animosity at Memorial Stadium should USC come to town.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that. That there's going to be a crossover between these two properties, to take it back to twisted movie metaphors. That's one where it's definitely a factor. It'd be hard for me to take it into account if I were fortunate enough to make such a decision with no real bad answer, of course. Like playing football at USC, Georgia, or Nebraska has the potential to be a pretty great thing. So I'm a little bit shocked. I haven't even processed the fact that, oh yeah, USC is in the Big Ten in a year from now.
Yeah, just to kind of reset it, maybe for folks that don't follow recruiting as much, and listen, there it's what, like 24 players, 25 players on unofficial visits this weekend, headlined by Raiola. There's another five-star receiver that's in town. So it could be like one of those watershed kind of moments for Nebraska recruiting and for Rule in general. Brandon, meanwhile, there was football practice that opened up this week. That started on Monday. And, they were in pads quite a bit. Some interesting little nuances, and I'm just wondering some things that maybe stood out to you and what they could foretell. But, like, you know, they don't like to throw. The quarterback's rule says he doesn't want them throwing, like, indoors. He wants them throwing outside only just to get used to the wind. That's one thing. And then just the general pace of practice. There was some talk about how the players were just like, wow, this is like, I'm pretty tired. Like, we really got after it. Just the general pace is serious. What stood out to you just with kind of seeing Matt Rule's operation in action for the first time?
Yeah, the throwing piece of it, and I guess this is also kind of applicable to special teams, it seems. But the throwing piece of it caught my attention, specifically because, you know, we talked about this on this show last week about the Trev Alberts, Tom Osborne, Matt Rule sit down. And Tom Osborne, you know, for a long time, I don't know when he first said these things, but I've heard them multiple times. He said them, you know, to me in times that I've had the opportunity to interview him about some stuff, you know, talking about the value of a rushing yard being greater than a passing yard, and specifically knowing you've got to be able to throw in the wind. And I was kind of like, you know, makes sense once you say it, but I'm just like, is that why Rule's doing this? Was this how it was, you know, at Baylor? Did Temple even have an indoor facility when he was there to give him the choice? So that kind of caught my attention. It's just like, oh, that's interesting. I think the biggest thing was, though, and I wasn't at Thursday's practice, of course, but our entire team was, and looking at their updates and just talking to them, you know, individually, like the way that they structured this, where, you know, the groupings weren't necessarily by position at all times, and everybody kind of did everything, struck me as, you know, at this stage, and I'm sure you dial it in as you continue to go along, but they're just kind of teaching everybody football, which might seem a little bit reductionist. You know, if you're like, well, these guys are Big Ten football players now, they should know some of this stuff. Well, even if that's the case, if that's kind of somebody's starting position on that matter, well, isn't it interesting then that they're saying, no, we're kind of going to take this back? Like, it was almost like what you would do with a youth football camp when they have those. It's like, hey, the value here is in you learning everything. Learn the technique. You're going to run the drills no matter if, I mean, you're not going to have your offensive linemen working on their five-step drops, of course. But largely, everybody kind of went through a little bit of everything. And that was intriguing to me.
Hmm. Brendan Vogel with us, managing editor, HailVarsity.com and magazine, weekend edition of Hail Varsity. You're just catching this or new to it. Streams on Saturday. YouTube page for Hail Varsity is where you can watch it, can make some comments in the stream. We'll get to some of those here in a little bit.
One of those we have to get to. Sorry.
Chris. Yeah, no, we'll do that.
One of them is Chris. It's 40 out. Is it cold in the studio? Because you have the wool cap on.
Let's just be honest. I have not combed my hair yet this morning.
Okay.
Not sure you can call it a studio either.
It's the living room slash kitchen.
Fair point.
So, Vogues, are you worried about the number of offensive linemen in spring camp? Where are they at with like 10 scholarship, 14 overall? Does that concern you? I think they'll find seven they like, but you need more. You need more, and maybe you go shopping this spring. I don't know, or May more specifically. But that's been commented on. Not only the lack of offensive linemen at Pro Day for Nebraska, but just your offensive line numbers. What's your interpretation there, other than the obvious of, man, they're thin this year?
Yeah, I think, you know, going into spring practice, like we all kind of knew that Matt Rhule effectively said the numbers aren't where they'd want them to be for that group. And obviously you can't change that now. Like, and even in May, you're going to get 2 weeks. And I'm guessing Nebraska will take some swings at that position in the transfer portal. But as we've talked about before, it's really competitive for kind of offensive linemen who are experienced and a little bit ready made. So, am I concerned about it at this point? It just kind of is what it is. Now we show up on Tuesday and they're like, unfortunately, this guy got a little dinged up. He's going to be out for the rest of it. Like, you just don't have a lot of wiggle room for that. So that's where you get into a little bit of this is kind of dicey territory, because you went in knowing it was going to be a little bit dicey just with the numbers. So that's one of those things where it's tough to address. You've got the May window, and that's kind of about it. If you get through all of these 15 practices and say, yeah, we need more numbers right now.
Are you following the saga of Micah Mazzucca down at Florida, Brandon? Because that seems really interesting to me. He's in the transfer portal, at least he says he is, and then he deletes a tweet and he hasn't entered his name in the portal. But it seems like not all is well down in Gatorville with Micah Mazzucca.
Yeah, it definitely came up in our Hail Varsity Slack discussions. That's kind of where Nebraska is at. Anytime, and I think given that they've landed some guys from Florida, you're like, oh, interesting. But really, just kind of been an interesting offseason in Gainesville, which surprises me a little bit. You know, I think a lot of Billy Napier is the head coach, and you can always expect some attrition with a coaching change. But I've been a little bit surprised they've landed in the headlines specifically for transfer reasons as often as they have.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the kid that was at Baylor that Nebraska was a finalist for, mm-hmm. when he was going to, well, finalist. And he was considering coming to Nebraska, ended up choosing Florida. Who knows, maybe he'll reconsider and come back. But I want to say, too, I believe when Riley took over, weren't they down? It might have been in the spring, but just from memory, I thought they only had like 8 scholarship offensive linemen at one point, 8 or 9. Does that ring a bell? Like, they were really depleted, and then they had to somehow add to it. I could be wrong there. I know that was the case with receiver, and I want to say offensive line was really low, too.
Yeah, I don't recall if it was ever that low. I'll have to go back and look at the kind of that initial recruiting class for Riley and staff, because, I mean, at that point, you really couldn't do anything. Transfers couldn't play right away. What are you going to do other than kind of look to the junior college ranks in that first recruiting class? But yeah.
There, you know, some interesting comments too from Marcus Satterfield and Tony White. Tony White, the defensive coordinator, the thing he emphasized more than anything, and it might explain sort of what we were talking about earlier, where about having, you know, players practice all kinds of like different types of positions and go through different types of drills, is White kept coming back to mentality, right? He said that word probably 12 times in his media session, where that's what they're focused on right now is mentality. And they said a couple things that just warm the cockles of my heart, where he's talking about, hey, we need to be intentional. And then I can't remember what the term was, but something that talked about really like dominating your contact or something like that. Like
dominant contact.
So it appears what they're really emphasizing, which is great because the sport is tackle football, is like collisions and winning those collisions. and not ignoring the fact that that's what football like is. And that's what they're really focused on right now. And because of that, he called out a couple guys, Malcolm Hartzog, of being a guy that they're moving around and they're just so impressed with his how intentional he is when he's out on the field. And then they also announced John Bullock, who's a kid out of Creighton Prep, walk-on.
He's fun. He's a good ball player.
Yeah, good athlete. Played a lot on special teams last year, but I think he had some sort of injury. And they moved him down from secondary to linebacker. So we're starting to see some of that, too, some of the position changes. Anything on that front, Brandon, what we heard from Tony White and or some of the position changes and or the guys that he was calling out?
I mean, I think the biggest thing that jumped out to me was, you know, you mentioned the word mentality became a little bit of a mantra in that first practice media session with Coach White. And that also strikes me as just an observer as a little bit of music to my ears, because when you think about when I think about it, every football coach, I think, knows the importance of identity. The difference becomes how fanatical are you about it? And, you know, let's think back about it. Like, I mean, it's tough for me to come up with an example off the top of my head. When's the last time where we could just sit around the four of us having a conversation and say, Nebraska's offense, you know, it can do this, this, and this, but it is this. Even defensively, can you do that? You know, for me, you maybe have to go back to 2009, 2010, which even then, like, I don't remember kind of having the catchphrase, for lack of a better term, of something like dominant contact to even hang your hat on. It was just, well, Bo's a defensive guy. And hey, and Ndamukong Suh and Jared Crick and those guys up front are really good. And oh, by the way, you've got a school of sharks in the secondary who you've kind of assembled from traditional recruiting and the junior college ranks. And the identity was just, oh, they're really darn good. They're giving up like 10 points a game. But, you know, here at the start of a new coaching staff, you're trying to like establish that and set it out from the beginning. So merits watching. It's the sort of thing that, like I said, a lot of coaches talk about it. I think the difference ends up being how fanatical are you about it? And then the ultimate difference becomes like, do you see it on Saturdays?
Dude, I'm down with that school of sharks analogy. That is great.
I love that secondary. And Gomes, Haig.
Well, yeah,
that was a good secondary. And that's, Fonzie.
Honestly, the 3-5-3 or the 3-3-5. What is it?
3-3-5.
Little peso dexting. Flashback, Kranek.
Well, they almost ran like a 3.
It's sort of the idea. But that's sort of the idea with it, right? Is to have just a lot of moving parts, little feeding frenzy kind of on the second and third level. I like that.
Vogues, what's coming up here, bud, for you with Hail Varsity?
Yeah, so we've still got plenty from the first week of spring practice that we're kind of working through and putting out on the site throughout the weekend. And then we'll go straight back into Tuesday. So now the open availability feeding frenzy for football practice now. So that's been good. Had a great video of the jersey retirement ceremony that's up on our YouTube page now.
Yeah.
So if you weren't able to catch that, Jolie Peel, who works with us, did a great job with that video. And we'll have baseball and softball, you know, at the end of the weekend, and then it's kind of continues to be full steam ahead on the football front. And the yearbook discussions have already started too, so that'll be behind the scenes and a ways away. But the plate's filling up a little bit.
Well, enjoy your weekend, man, and thanks for jumping on. Good to chat some ball this morning.
All right, guys, have a good one.
There he is.
Thanks, Brandon.
Good to spend time.
8-4.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, 8-4 last night, Nebraska over Illinois.
Mm-hmm.
And let's bring on the Iron Horse, Gary Sharp, with us. And Sharpie, you've got a little ray of light behind you peeking through the window, so that looks almost angelic. Pretty impressive outing for Nebraska baseball last night, right?
Hey, you know what? First of all, that's planned. You know, you can see the beam. So when Nebraska baseball wins, I do the beam like they do in Sacramento.
Yeah. Well, there's been somebody this morning. I don't know who it is.
You got an angel in the outfield now with Erstad being up. Right?
And
the
somebody here, one of us three, maybe it was Brandon, I don't know. There's been birds chirping in the background, and along with like this beam of light coming in, it's been like the most beautiful Saturday morning show we've had in a while. So
it is. It's the church of football discussion.
Mm-hmm.
Hail Varsity Radio. Are your windows open or no? Because it isn't my house.
You got the blinds going a little bit. Yeah.
I know there's no studio. I know there's no birds that live on Cornhusker Highway that aren't on meth. So.
Yeah, that ended about 40 years ago when that first industrial plant stopped by. But you know what? I think I've told you guys this, and I've tried to get other people on board. Nebraska, I think I'm going to pause on trying to judge Nebraska baseball on midweek games. And I said this about 2 weeks ago after watching Olsen and Kaminska back-to-back and this offense, which in midweek games, the offense hasn't, for the most part, let you down. They are good enough on the mound with a 1-2 hammer in this conference that they're going to give themselves a shot to win the regular season. And you look at Olsen's performance last night, they got exactly what you need out of a Friday guy. Now, he wasn't Comey-esque, which, you know, we kind of got spoiled when Shane was pitching, and every Friday night we expected a victory in 12 strikeouts. But he gave you enough, and Nebraska got off to a great start. They jumped on Illinois, and then they held on. And you know what? You got a ninth inning out of a guy that is your closer that only had to pitch one inning. So yesterday was pretty promising, but here's how it works. You guys are all in baseball. It only makes sense if you do something today. You know, they always say in baseball the momentum is – your next day's starting pitcher. Well, if Nebraska goes out and does it again, then that's how I'm feeling. They've got a hammer at 1-2, and they're going to give them a shot to get to Sundays in the Big Ten Conference where it is Sunday fun day, run day, you know, where you try and score as many runs as possible. So that was a nice victory, and I'm sure it swayed a couple of guys that were in the ballpark.
That's what it's all about. What do you think of that turnout and the fan fest towards the kids that are there? Is it, oh wow, this is big for Nebraska, or welcome to Nebraska, this is potentially going to be your life if you live up to expectations on the field?
Well, I think it's, you know, you take them outside of the football facilities and show them there is life elsewhere. But isn't it interesting to you guys? It's really kind of how when Rule got here, we have seen more interaction between all the sports. And especially on social media, where coaches are tweeting at each other of support, or they're having fun with each other, or athletes are tweeting more, hey, I'm a football player, but make sure you're at the women's basketball game. Or, you know, you've got one of the key administrators in football is saying, I hope everybody shows up to support, you know, Nebraska baseball on Friday night. And then you've got players that are on social media that are encouraging people to come. And that's smart, because this fan base, I mean, you say, hey, here's a poll, Nebraska's losing, go to it. They'll dominate that poll. Or if you put out a call, you put out the red bat signal, people will show up to support whatever Nebraska athletes or coaches are asking. I mean, that's kind of the beauty of Nebraska athletics. But I find that, you know, it's kind of been lacking where you haven't had a lot of crossover. It's great to see that there's crossover now, because I think they can all benefit each other. And you know what? If the big mama wins, everybody else wins. Mm-hmm.
Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity on the weekend edition.
Did you forget what the show was?
Kinda, yeah. I was like, on Hail Varsity.
Did you spill on your shirt? It looks like you spilled something on your shirt, dude. You're looking down.
Is that a Village
Does
People
that say
shirt?
People below it or what? Oh, gotcha. Okay.
My top two options with your Village People or Village Idiot, and I was wrong on both.
Yeah. Village Idiot would be that's very hurtful. I'm sorry about that you would say that.
It was number stuck two with Village People.
It was the number two option behind Village People, if that makes you feel better.
Okay, it doesn't. So the opening of practice, and you know, it looks like Matt Rhule is okay with opening up practice a little bit more than the last regime and letting people see a little bit more. And they're doing yoga stretches during the middle of practice, and they're going from station to station pretty quickly. They're going to be in pads a lot more, it appears, like as often as possible. I don't know. It seems like the pace was pretty legit. Seems like the energy was pretty legit. And the coaches talked about how that, you know, they seem impressed and pleasantly surprised at how much the team is sort of on board and bought in already and their general work ethic. And for as much as, you know, everybody's upset about with Frost for what happened there, he did leave behind that, at least, right? He left behind some workers, left behind some kids that have a generally good attitude, it appears. Right? Is that your takeaway too? That like Rule is not dealing with a ton of like, oh my God, like having to spend a ton of time on sort of the mental side of things and dealing with sort of head cases.
Yeah, you know what? And I agree with you, Mark. I also think it helps. There was a little blurb in The Athletic earlier this week about the transition and getting the buy-in. And none of us have used the word buy-in, which is pretty amazing and a tribute to Matt Rhule in the transition, that Scott Frost and Matt Rhule's personalities are very similar, in my opinion. They have different skill sets when it comes to implementing a plan and what they do on the field. But I think their mindsets
bingo. Are very, underline that, Gary. Hold on. Underline that. That's such a good point. Like, implementing is the biggest difference here, right?
But the personalities are the same, which it's not a drastic bow to Mike to Scott, where guys had to really adjust. So I also think, credit to Mickey Joseph and the guys that were here mid-September on, that this didn't turn into a complete dumpster fire. That they found guys that the word babied. It wasn't Donovan Raiola babying his offensive lineman. It was the top of Donovan Raiola that didn't want to go in with his hard coaching. And guys want to be coached. And, you know, Rhule is leaning on the word elite and coachable. And I think he has found guys that want to be coached hard. I mean, the video that was shared of A.J. Allen running through the blaster, not hard enough, and the interaction with E.J. Barthel. Guys want to be coached hard, and this is a staff that's going to coach them hard, and they're going to meet in the middle, and hopefully good things happen. But I think they've done first of all, another quick observation, there are a ton of on-field personnel. I mean, Nebraska has a lot of guys that are either full-time position coaches or the head coach, or they're just involved in the program. I mean, this is a Fortune 500 operation that's going on now with Nebraska football. Finally, they look like other programs. You go to an Ohio State practice, and I was there about a year ago, there's guys everywhere that are coaching and observing and analyzing. And Nebraska's kind of getting to that spot. But I think there's coachable players. There's coaches that realize that. And so they're all going to meet on some level. Now, it's going to be a learning curve because they're going to have more attention to detail probably during the course of a practice than the previous staff had, instead of waiting till you get back up to the position room. So that's going to be an adjustment. But I think for the first week and the little bit that we got to see the other day in 40 minutes, I think it's encouraging. I think it's football. That's what it is. It's not Mickey Mouse stuff. It's football. And I think there's guys that have been clamoring for that since they've been at Nebraska, and they're finally getting it.
Gary Sharp's with us here. It's the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio. And Gary, what do you make of Matt Rhule's? What was that, Mark?
Is it the weekend edition of Hail Varsity Radio?
Well, I guess it is streaming, but I digress. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
What do you make of Matt Rhule saying he's going to use practice almost as a recruiting tool? He wants guys to come down, see practice, and just see how the things are going to operate once they're in Lincoln before they make a decision. What do you make of that, Gary?
Well, look at Thursday, the first time that we could all observe, you have a lot of high school coaches, a lot from the Metro that are there. We've seen Willis McGahee IV shows up on a practice and says, I want to come back for the spring game because Dylan Raiola is going to be there. But I liked what I saw at practice, the energy, the teaching that was going on. I think he realizes that the whole operation will be about recruiting. We had TV Trev, the athletic director, and the picture that he put out yesterday. Everybody from top to bottom is in on recruiting. And I think that's going to benefit Nebraska because they're all pulling in the same direction. But seeing practice, I think if you're a recruit and you're like, okay, I want to see how this works, and you see guys are being coached hard, I think that's important. I think they also – one thing they've done, and Mark alluded to it earlier, pausing to do yoga in the middle of practice, is they're making it fun. Like, it's not just all hard work and it's, you know, balls to the wall. It's they've made an element of it fun and enjoyable that guys like showing up at the facility. And that in that sport is not easy to do because you spend a lot of time at that facility.
Tony White called out John Bullock, Gary, and you've been doing the game of the week and covering high school in the metro area for a while. This is a Creighton Prep kid. He was a walk-on. I'm assuming you got to see him during your time covering Creighton Prep. So the rest of us have not, right? Just have not seen him very much. He moves from the secondary to linebacker. Tony White calls him out specifically. What's this guy all about? Like, I just have no clue on, like, does he have a comp that you can think of? Is he a hitter? Is he a runner? Like, what's
he's just a winner. He makes plays.
You know what his comp is? And I think back at his senior year at Prep, Schmitty and I talked about him. He was one of those guys, like, if you saw Prep play and he was on the same team with AJ Rollins, you said that guy's the best player on the field for Prep. He's just a football player. He has great football IQ. He's all around the ball on defense. Now, I thought he was a pretty good wide receiver as well. He's got great speed. Here's the thing. Nebraska was interested in him for a long time, but in terms of giving him a scholarship, they always did the measurables and, hey, if you reach that point in your 40 time, we got a scholarship waiting. Instead of going with the eye test and the faith of we can develop somebody like this and we need guys like this in our program, he's just a football player. You know, Luke Reimer was just a football player, but really, really good. And he came as a walk-on, got the scholarship, and now he's a multi-year starter. He's a little bit like Reimer. I think he's a little bit more quick twitch, but he's got great football IQ, and he's not, and he has an attention to detail. People are going, well, Malcolm Hartsog, I really liked him, but why is he getting all kinds of love? You know what? If you ever watch Malcolm Hartsog practice or in a game, there are very few times that he is out of place. Even last year as a freshman playing that position, he has a big attention to detail. And that's the thing I appreciate about John Bullock is he gets into the playbook. He knows where he has to be. And I noticed that he's starting to line up other players. So he's just a football player. And he's the kind of guy that you need on the field. The other team is going to look at him and go, oh, man, is that a Big Ten guy? And then the ball is snapped and you see his ability and you go, okay, I can see why he's on this roster. So I think the one thing when these coaches in the first week are talking about certain players, we probably need to listen a little bit closer because there's a big reason why they're not just saying it, why Gabe Irvin has gotten a lot of love, why Heinrich Harburg has gotten a lot of love, Hartsog, Bullock. There's a reason why coaches are attracted to those players.
Gary Sharp with us, and you nailed it with Bullock. He's just a winner, a ball player. And he I think I did the Prep Southeast or Prep Southwest game his senior year, and it was a shootout, and he just wore out. He wore out everybody at the wide receiver and in the secondary. I mean, he was so much fun. And the minute Nebraska got him as a walk-on, I'm like, that's huge. I hope good things continue for him. Sharpie, I want to talk Sweet 16, Elite Eight. Of course, Florida Atlantic. Still alive, shocking Tennessee. And then, of course, we've been engulfed in blue with what Creighton's been able to do as they outlasted Princeton, and now San Diego State awaits. This is pretty fascinating because you've had a season of expectations for Creighton. You have the lull, and now it's, oh, okay, maybe they are as good as everybody thought they were supposed to be. They're on the doorstep of history. I mean, I know the Elite Eight's impressive, but this path for them is much more doable. Not their fault, but you get Princeton. You don't have to mess with Alabama. They could get to Houston.
They could. I think anybody that watched them play – if you had your preseason expectations, I mean, they have a roster that's constructed to win in March, just the way they play 1 through 5 and their versatility, and they have a big man that can do a lot of different things for you. So I'm not surprised they're in this spot. You know, the tournament is so wacky that you end up with a 15 seed in the Elite Eight or in the Sweet 16, and now you got San Diego State. I'm not so sure. And, you know, in Alabama up until last night was, along with UConn, in my opinion, playing the best in the tournament. And so that's all part of madness. San Diego State, remember last year when they got knocked out in the opening round by Creighton, they were up 9 with 2 minutes to go, and Creighton knocked them out. They came back, they got the game to overtime, and they won the game. Basically, San Diego State and Creighton's roster, they all returned from last year. That's an old group at San Diego State. You see that they get after it, man. they bring you into the mud and they hang around there. And, you know, they missed a lot of shots at the rim last night. Matt Bradley for San Diego State took a while to get going. I don't know that it's a great matchup for Creighton, because I think with Alabama, you would have been able to get out and run a little bit on offense. I think this is going to be an adjustment for Creighton, but I think Creighton, you know, there'll be slight favorite in this game, but it's all part of madness. You know, look at, we're not going to have a number one seed. I mean, Texas is carrying the banner as a number two seed. It's, you know, last year we got spoiled with Duke, North Carolina, and KU in the Final Four. This year it's going to be kind of an odd Final Four, but because it's an odd Final Four, it may be the Final Four that gets Creighton to the doorstep of winning a national championship.
Yeah, Gary Sharp with us on Hail Varsity Something. We don't know what to call it. The audio show. We can call it that. The audio show. Nebraska baseball, real quick, Gary. What am I missing? So here's a baseball's a it's a long season, right? Trends matter. Top of the conference in batting average at 330. They're boat racing the rest of the conference in terms of batting average. Kind of middle of the road in terms of ERA, but fewest walks in the Big Ten by far. And then fielding percentage tops in the Big Ten. I'm like, it doesn't seem like a team that should be 12-7. Feels like their record should be better than that. What are we missing with Nebraska baseball? What else do they have to cement? Like, because when you look at those numbers, seems like this team should be winning a lot more. What's the piece that they have to figure out in order to start showing that?
3-4 starter, and then consistency out of the bullpen. And somebody you can rely on that you know that's going to come in and throw strikes. And I know there was a lot of discussion after the game against Creighton. And, you know, you had Will Walsh pull a performance that nobody expected. And you were down a little bit in the bullpen because of the illness to Shea, and Kyle Perry wasn't available. But you have to be able to throw strikes. You're on a scholarship. I'm bringing you in. Throw strikes. I don't care if a guy hits one to the Bob Carey pedestrian bridge. You've got to be able to throw strikes. And so finding a solid 3-4 starter and consistency out of the bullpen, then I think Nebraska has a lot of elements that you like to make the NCAA tournament. I'm not ready to go there yet. That's why I keep just saying Big Ten. They're built with a Friday and a Saturday guy to have success in the Big Ten, and they're hitting the baseball. You know, you would like them to strike out just a little bit less and not leave as many runners in scoring position. But what they're doing at the plate gives you enough of a chance to win games. So, you know, the record isn't gaudy, but if they can overcome those, you think there's probably 4 or 5 games where the bullpen let things get away. So that record looks a lot better. They need to grab some consistency. What they need to do is they need to get on a run. They need good weather where they're consistently playing, and they need to start to stack wins again like they did, you know, earlier after the San Diego trip where they put a win streak together. And when you're doing that, you're in conference play. So that also involves gaining some ground in the conference because, you know, the Big Ten, I think the Big Ten is probably a little bit better at the top than we thought. At the bottom, it's garbage. And that's where you're going to have to make your hay, is when you're playing Northwestern and Minnesota.
Gary, do you think it's more important for this Husker baseball team to find a third starter, a third guy in the rotation, or to find a guy in the bullpen that you know you can bring in a high leverage moment and get 3 outs? Because both of those things have been problems for the team this year. So I want to get your take on what's going to be more important for the team's success moving forward.
Well, I think you have more options. I think you have options as your number three, whether it be a Garza, whether you go back to Clark, whether Jackson Brockett is your guy. I think the one thing I can't figure out with Shea, and you look at, we got spoiled a couple of years ago with Schwellenbach coming out of the bullpen. He had a sub-1 ERA. Last year, Braxton Bragg was that guy, but he still had his ups and downs. The only thing I don't know about Shea is, and I like last night, they only pitched him for an inning, is why do they insist on 2 innings or 2-plus innings when he comes out of the bullpen? You know, because we usually see that after a good start, he'll get a little bit tired, and he goes 2 innings and gives up 5 runs. So I don't know what they'll decide there. But I like your use of high leverage because they have to find those guys that'll come in and throw strikes. They don't need to pitch 1 or 2 innings. If they can just come in and pitch to a couple of batters but be successful and string things together in the pen, then I like where they're headed. But, again, I like at the plate, I like where they're headed, and I like when Olsen and Kaminska, I would put those two guys in your 1 and 2 slot on the weekend up against anybody else in the Big Ten.
Sharpie, before we say goodbye, a thought on – a prediction. Does Nebraska get any commits from this weekend?
Maybe not this weekend, but now, see, that's a tough question because everything revolves around Dylan Raiola. Now, you can't base your whole class off one guy, but if you do, then there's a lot of things that can come with it. So it's tough to say. I think they will get a handful of commitments eventually off of this weekend. And remember, we like to talk about the national guys. Nebraska had a nice list of in-state guys that are here this weekend.
The in-state guys were great, like five or six of
them. Yeah, that's a key part of this whole equation as well. But really, until Dylan Raiola makes up his decision, it's tough to say the biggest benefit of this weekend. But regardless, I think there's some guys and stuff you read on their visit and how they feel about Nebraska that they're being recruited by Nebraska. They're not being recruited by the number one player in the class of 24. So I would say eventually there will be a handful of prospects. But how many guys, how quickly do you think we'll see not our local recruiting guys, including Brady with Hail Varsity, but the national guys will all of a sudden flip their crystal ball to Nebraska because it's recency bias. Last week it was Georgia. This week he's at Nebraska, so he's going to go to Nebraska, and then it'll be when he goes to USC.
Well, I think that just kind of speaks to the fact that nobody really knows anything when it comes to this recruitment, right?
Yeah. And I think the family wants it that way. And I do believe, I have no inside knowledge, even though there's a lot of things that Dylan gives off when he's on campus that you say, man, why wouldn't that guy? That guy has to be in the way he acts. I don't think he's made up his mind yet.
It's fair.
Well, he strikes me.
And there might be a part of dad loves Nebraska. Son really likes what they have at Nebraska. And it might be really tough to say no to Nebraska, but the fact that Nebraska still is involved is pretty amazing with the staff. Pretty amazing that they were able to organize and get excitement for a weekend of kids today to come watch practice. Not the spring game. They're coming to watch practice. And this amount of kids that on their own dime want to check out Matt Rhule at Nebraska and this staff before they've ever coached a football game.
To your point, Gary, Dylan strikes me as a guy that as soon as he makes up his mind will be made up in terms of we'll all know. I don't think he's the type of guy to go silent commit for a couple months because I think he knows how important he is in terms of peer recruiting.
Yeah, I agree. And unlike Ohio State, which, you know, he probably committed early in the process, I think when he says where he's going, that's lock stop and they move forward. It's just from Nebraska's perspective, you would love that to be sooner than later because if this stretches to June – and it's not Nebraska, what's your plan B? There isn't a lot of plan B out there if you look at who they've offered as scholarships. I don't know that they've offered any other quarterback in the class of 24 a scholarship outside of Raiola and Danny Kalen and the Bellevue West gunslinger committed to Mizzou. So you would like him to commit if he's going to choose Nebraska. You'd actually probably, for Nebraska's benefit, here in the next month to 5 weeks.
Here's this plan B, and then I promise we'll let you go. the plan B is if he doesn't go to Nebraska, you're going to have a portal option or a 2025 kid you're looking at. You had Stone here early this week. And then you've got some guys that at least this week they're – excited about. I mean, all five guys in that quarterback room Satterfield is impressed with, plus two more guys that are injured, of course. And I know by this Raiola recruitment timeline, you're going to have some departures. But I think the quarterback room from a development standpoint, Gary, I'm pretty excited about it. The guys they have on campus and the guys maybe they can go get. If not everyone's gonna have to have a plan B because, you know, Dylan can only go one spot. There's about four or five programs that have are chasing him. What are the other four or five schools do if he ends up at Nebraska or vice versa? Well, I think they can figure it out, but it would be really cool if Nebraska ended up getting him for the Nebraska fan base.
Well, you know, next you're going to get 2 years out of Sims regardless.
Yeah.
So, you know, you have that taken care of. And maybe that's your returning starter for 2024. That's why that number three quarterback going into the fall is so important, because if it is a Harburg and you really, really like him, it's not like he's towards the back end of his eligibility. his eligibility clock basically has just started. So that would be another young guy. And, you know, this is a staff that's not afraid to go and look at skill guys in the portal and grab guys. So I agree with you, Schmitty. It's just you would love to have that because it builds your class. Man, there's just there's like little droppings of Raiola's coming back for the spring game. His parents from or his grandparents from Hawaii are coming. You just can you push Nebraska over this, the finish line for the sake of where this program is going? Because him committing to Nebraska would be one of those narrative changing things that you'd have to get outside of just his uncle and his dad's a legacy. There would have to be more for Dylan Raiola to say yes to Nebraska that he sees that convinces him that this is the right place for his development to get to the NFL.
So, his grandparents I said this, are coming?
Yes. Yeah, so his grandparents are reportedly coming from Hawaii for the spring game, which
Donovan. Just don't get your hopes up, Mark. They're here
but
to see
there are in. No there are no grandchildren that are actually playing in the spring game.
He's in.
There's a son who's coaching. There's a son who's coaching.
Crane X doing the math upstairs. Do you know how expensive flights are from Hawaii to Nebraska?
I mean, yeah, there are a lot of things like, well, let me ask you this, and I know we got to get out of here. Like if he says yes to Nebraska, we know what the reaction is. If he says no to Nebraska, do you think people are accepting of that?
No.
Think they understand?
No. No, they're trying to fight Dom. They're trying to fight Dom.
Keep in mind,
they're getting their ass kicked. But they're going to try.
In any other world, he's not looking at Nebraska. Yeah. Any other world, he's not looking at Nebraska. But it's a credit to Nebraska that they're still in the game when they were outside of the ballpark last year. I mean, they weren't even given a ticket. They didn't even know the code to get in the gate. And they're back in the game. You know, we've never gone through this around here because in the modern recruiting era, you know, we didn't have the attention of the Tommy Frazier. It wasn't as big a business as it is now. I guess this is what the Georgias, Clemsons, Alabamas, and Ohio States and Michigans do when they're pursuing the number one guy. You ride the roller coaster. It's just we're riding the roller coaster with somebody that's got an intimate connection with the Nebraska football program. It's wild. I've said buckle up. You're going to take twists and turns, but I'm sure that he is everything he says positive about Nebraska this weekend, and then just wait till he goes somewhere else, and the national guys will say, "Oh, now he's going to USC." But I don't know. I think Nebraska has positioned themselves really, really well to get somebody to convince somebody of a plan that can get him to where he wants to go, and it's not just because of his dad or his uncle.
If he commits elsewhere before the spring game. And then the grandparents still show up for it. It's like seats taken. Like you can't.
Is it a refundable flight? Right.
Yeah. I'm guessing if the grandparents are here, they're not
y'all
sitting in section 11. You know, they're not up. They're not up in the 96th row of the North Stadium.
Man, one of the yellow jackets at the gates will be like, "Y'all ain't welcome here anymore." Right.
Well,
like that.
Well, the grandparents don't might do that to your grandparents. Say no to drug pledge.
free admission.
Weirdest moment in my life in the spring game. I'm 10 years old. Dad, can we get onto the field? It's a just say no to alcohol and drug pledge. Dad turns is like, say no to alcohol? What? I'm not kidding. It's like, you go. I'm staying here.
Well, now they've actually included say no to enhance sports gambling in the state of Nebraska.
It's been added.
And there'll be kids on the field protesting, holding up their phones. What about mobile? What about mobile?
Wait till next year to bet on Gonzaga.
They should bring it back because it would be one of the highest points, you know, in kids' lives when they go on the field and run
get
around
the
and they could care less what Coach Osborne is saying. They're like, just I'm on the field playing.
Yeah, it was great. It was good. Sharpie, have a good weekend.
Debauchery play.
Hey, thanks, guys. Hey, one quick thing. Can I ask a quick question?
Sure.
You guys have seen the Colorado first week of spring practice video, right?
With Gian wearing the cowboy hat?
I can't get off this. Why does Colorado's players look so small? Go back. You guys can text me. You can email me, tweet me, whatever. Go back and look at the video that's being shared out of Boulder. Their guys are tiny. And I can't figure it out.
Well,
they don't show a lot of linemen, but
they were the worst team in Power 5 last year, aside from maybe Northwestern, so that could explain it.
Yeah, but they don't need to go and get 5'10", 150-pound guys. Everybody looks like a kicker.
Wow.
That's interesting.
Well, it doesn't matter in the Pac-12.
Well, yeah. I mean, Deion says, hey, you know where to find me. How about finding some kids the training table?
How about some calories?
Go back, go and look at some of the videos or the screenshots of Cowboy Deion and his team.
I love the hat.
I hate it. Oh, it looks so wrong on him.
Poor Deion. I mean, Deion's going to show up with the mother of all bell buckles. You wait. That's going to be the next video.
September 9th in Boulder is going to be a gong show.
Oh, I can't wait. We're there. So it's going to be nuts. Mm. So no more Coors.
Pulling up the football roster. So far, 6'4 is the tallest.
6'1", 80. 6'1", 180. 6'1",
okay,
180.
On the roster. But look at video of their like huddles at midfield. Guys look really, really small, and I can't figure out why. You don't really ever see any lineman drills, so you don't see the D-line and O-line, which are significantly larger. But everybody else looks really, really tiny.
He just recruited wideouts and corners, dude, I guess.
They have a lineman that's 6'10", 315 on the roster.
Yeah, on the roster.
But not on the video.
Yeah, it does not have a number either.
Uh-huh. In real life, 6'2". You know, Deion likes to embellish a little bit. Just now, this. Okay, here's a guy. Yeah, according to the roster, they seem fairly normal, but we'll see.
Yeah, the next time
you see anything out of Boulder, just check out the players around Deion. I think they look really small, and I can't figure it out because I know some of the guys he got to transfer are legit D1 football players. Mm.
So, unclear. Okay.
All right. Have a great weekend,
you
boys.
Appreciate you guys. All right. Appreciate Gary Sharp, Brandon Vogel.
Doesn't THC stunt growth?
I don't know.
I think that's coffee.
What did you say, Elijah?
I think that's coffee. I think coffee stunts growth.
Yeah. I didn't let Junior drink coffee when he was young. I haven't let Junior hit THC either, just before you asked that question. So we'll be back at you.
Well, Monday. I think THC actually enhances growth depending on how many Doritos you're eating.
Four.
Fair point.
Is when you hear us with Hail Varsity. Krainak, be good. Appreciate you.
You as well, sir. All right,
thanks so much. We'll talk to you next time with Hail Varsity presented by Currency.